Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. If you want to listen live, all you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Also, if you want to catch this show on video, be sure to check out Zumo TV, channel 719. That's where you can find SportsGrid's Fantasy Sports Network. Enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening.
Welcome back, Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. Craig Mish, Joe Pizzapia. Follow Joe on Twitter at JoePizzapia17. Follow me on Twitter at Craig Mish. Follow us on Twitter at Sports Grid. Make sure that your favorites are bookmarked to our YouTube channel where we post all of our videos all day and all night long. The guys do a great job, guys and girls, do a great job posting our videos over at sportsgrid.com. Also, a lot of live television apps that you can watch our show. Whether you are an iOS user or an Apple user, just head on over to Pluto TV, Zumo TV, or Stir. Download those apps and see what they have for you. I highly recommend watching all of the shows that they have. Believe it or not, yes, it is like the equivalent of having television in your house, except for you have it right on your phone. It is super cool. In terms of some of the interesting stories that we're watching, of course, NASCAR had a huge weekend over the weekend. Matt Sells is going to join us coming up. Joe and I, in the first hour of the show, if you want to go back on demand and watch, talked about the idea of Major League Baseball coming back, some of the things that are surrounding that, although not a huge update from yesterday to today. And here on today's show, we're going to touch on some more NFL futures. Now, we've run the gamut, essentially, of all of the teams and their season win totals. I think we pretty much covered them all here in the last month or so. So I thought it would be time, maybe potentially, to get an edge on a couple of lines for the NFL MVP and the comeback player of the year in the NFL. And Joe, times certainly have changed quite a bit over the last decade in the NFL. You're almost exclusively looking at quarterbacks winning this award.
Yeah, the running backs, there's been a few in the last 30 years. You got the Sean Alexander year, you've got LaDainian Tomlinson, but I mean, they are few and far between because there's the devaluing of the running back position by NFL franchises has kind of impacted that because the running backs by committee, because of specialization, all of those things. But even the big bell cow running backs, I mean, Christian McCaffrey last year was certainly, hard to argue, wasn't the most valuable to his team. But at the same time, if you're not going to win, how valuable are you? And that is always difficult. It has become a quarterback award. I don't know how I feel about that, though, because I guess I'll put it to you. Who is more valuable? Is it always the quarterback because that's where we are in the NFL? Or can a running back or a wide receiver like a Michael Thomas? Because frankly, I mean, where are the Saints without Michael Thomas last year, especially when Drew Brees went down? Michael Thomas was, I think, in that conversation for that award. A few years ago, I think Antonio Brown was in the conversation for that award.
It just shows you that they're never getting that award anymore.
I know, but I guess that's the question. What does one have to do, or is it just a total failure at the quarterback position of somebody to really stand out for someone else besides a quarterback to win?
I think those situations are the future of what this award is. I think those are really good examples because if Michael Thomas is not going to win the NFL MVP, then no wide receiver.
1,700 yards.
I mean, you can't have a better year than that guy did.
And carried that team while Brees was out as a wide receiver.
He did, but it's a quarterback league, and I think moving forward, unless we see something historical, and that was almost historical, by the way, from Michael Thomas, I don't think that you're going to see anyone outside of a quarterback win. I don't know what it would take. I suppose if a running back got 2,000 yards, maybe, and I can't identify that guy now.
He's got all-purpose numbers like that. I mean,
did Chris Johnson win the MVP when he rushed for 2,000?
That is a great question. I don't believe he did, but we have to check on that. I don't think so. We'd have to go back and look for sure. I can't remember.
Yeah, so look.
NFL MVPs, so but that is,
it's just not going to happen.
That's just crazy. I'll take a look at that, and I'll bring that up while you continue to name who these guys are, and I'll check on that for you.
All right. Well, let's take a look at the 2020 futures here on FanDuel, and you're looking at the odds to win the NFL MVP. You'll notice that I listed the ones that are not clean. Now, clean is 6-1, 7-1, 10-1. If they're like a half involved or a percentage, then I just put the plus 380, as you could see there with Patrick Mahomes. So essentially, it's almost 4-1 that Mahomes is the favorite to win the 2020 NFL MVP. We have Lamar Jackson at 6-1. Also, Russell Wilson is listed at 6-1. Dak Prescott's odds are 12-1. You ask me, is there anything to this as far as his holdout is concerned? If tomorrow they sign Dak Prescott to a multi-year deal, what would his odds to win the NFL MVP be? maybe 11-1. I mean, I don't know that he would even go to 10. It's about where it should be. Drew Brees, you got it 16-1. And notice no running backs here, by the way. Deshaun Watson 17-1, Carson Wentz 17-1, and if you go online to the FanDuel Sportsbook, you can clearly see there are more players who are positioned at 20-1 and above. But for the purposes of being realistic here, I think that it's probably going to be among these. Now, let's also use the caveat that we could sit here all day and throw darts, and we wouldn't have had Lamar Jackson winning NFL MVP last year. He wouldn't have been on this list.
No, nope,
so it's true. It certainly could happen. There could be someone else. But for the purposes of this exercise today, is there any that you take a shot with here?
I think this is a pretty good list right there. It is the quarterbacks. I could tell you this, you know, Russell Wilson's never gotten an MVP vote. And that's been a story that's kind of been on the little back burner in the last week. A lot of people talking about it on social media that, you know, what's Russell Wilson got to do to get some votes for it? I'll tell you what, if Russell Wilson and the Seahawks can overtake the 49ers in that division, which I don't think is a hot take or an impossibility, I think you got to start looking at Russell Wilson a little bit. I think Russell Wilson's kind of the guy that almost like become the Rodney Dangerfield of the NFL. It just doesn't get enough credit. And I was tough on Russell Wilson early on because I thought he was basically carried by that defense, and he was. But then again, so was Roethlisberger early in his career. So was Tom Brady. It took them a little while to kind of make the guys around them better. And I wasn't sold right away that Wilson was that kind of quarterback. I'm sold. I've been sold the last 4 years on Russell Wilson doing that. And it's been really impressive to watch him grow into that kind of quarterback. So for me, I think the fun money is on Russell Wilson at 6-1, because there seems to be a narrative building of, hey, Russell Wilson doesn't get any credit. And Russell Wilson is a wonderful figure in the NFL. I think he's very well liked by most people that cover him as well. Not a very controversial guy. Mahomes is obviously the easy one. I think it would be very difficult for Lamar to repeat. I don't think that's going to happen. Prescott, I'm not buying that one. Brees, I'm worried about the health again, too. Just this, the age is difficult. Deshaun Watson, it's 17-1. I can't believe it's only 17-1. I just don't think they have a chance. I really don't like this Houston team at all. Wentz would be an intriguing one. You know, if the Eagles all of a sudden pulled away, beat up on the Cowboys this year, made a really good run into the playoffs, that could be one that would be surprising and fun, and he could be in this mix. But to me, I want to put my money on Russell Wilson. And by the way, the last running back, or non-quarterback as it were, to win, Adrian Peterson 2012 is the last time we got one. Before that, yeah, well, it was Adrian Peterson in 2012 with the Vikings. Then before that, it was Rodgers, Brady, Manning, Brady, Tomlinson, Alexander. So yeah, back-to-back years. So no CJ2K. He did not win the MVP. It was correct there. It's just quarterback after quarterback. And even after Adrian Peterson, it was Manning, Rodgers, Newton, Ryan, Brady, Mahomes, and Lamar. So there you have it.
Yeah, I think that from this list, it's a pass for me. I don't see any value. The one, if I could dig deep, pick Josh Allen on Buffalo. That's the one, because I think that they're in a position where at a 30 or 40-1, if that scenario plays out where New England isn't good, okay, it could very well, they could win the Super Bowl, New England again next year. But what if the wheels fall off and they're 7-9 or 8-8? And what if Buffalo is 11-5 or 12-4? And what if Josh Allen over the last 8 games throws 30 touchdowns? I don't think it's going to happen, but that is my Hail Mary throw.
Well, but he's got a defense to carry him. So he's got
But he's not going to win an MVP based on defense. He's got to
But what I'm saying is, but defense does put you, a good defense like that does put you in a position to be successful when they create turnovers, when they do things like that. They give you shorter fields to work with. All of a sudden,
he also has a hard time throwing deep, but that's another part of it.
Well, yeah, but he's also kind of like this, you know, he's this playmaker guy, you know, like Lamar Jackson is, where he's able on a third down, on a 3rd and 8, to end up with a 20-yard gain, and everyone's looking around going, wow, man, it's unbelievable. And those are backbreaking plays. So I think Allen is an interesting dart throw, actually. I really like that one. I think it's theirs to lose. It is Buffalo's division to lose. There's no excuses for them this year. No Tom Brady. You've got to go out there. You've competed with
Miami
the
Miami isn't good, and the Jets aren't good, and New England is just average. Now, if New England's good, that changes everything, and that's very possible.
But even so, they've competed with New England the last two
seasons. Yeah, but he's going to need some signature games next year. Like, he's going to need, against a really good team, a throw for like 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. Like, that, like that's part of winning the MVP, I think, for me. I don't think he's going to win it, but that's my dart throw. All right, comeback player of the year in the NFL in 2020. And this is, again, courtesy of the FanDuel Sportsbook online. We got Roethlisberger's the favorite, 2.5 to 1. Gronk at 3 to 1. This is one I would just erase. J.J. Watt, plus 550, so about 5 to 1, 6 to 1. Cam Newton, 7.5 to 1, not interested there. A.J. Green, a little interested in. Matt Stafford, I don't understand why he's here, but 9 to 1. And then Alex Smith is one that I am interested in at 14 to 1, because if he is healthy by some miracle and Haskins doesn't play, who knows, week 3 or 4, what Alex Smith could be. And potentially, Joe, I want to take a look real quick at what Alex Smith has done when he has been on the field. In 2016, I mean, he threw for 3,500 yards. I know not a lot of touchdowns that year because they were rushing the ball a ton. 15 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. But look at his numbers in 17. 4,000 yards, 26 touchdowns. With Washington, his numbers were really good in the 10 games that he played. And then, of course, he didn't play last year. I know that this is another Hail Mary, but I guess there's like a part of me that's sort of rooting a little for Alex Smith, too. So probably ends up being Roethlisberger. It's a really easy one here. But what if Roethlisberger isn't good? Then it is wide open at that point.
It is, or if he gets hurt again or something like that, which I don't think is going to be the case. But if it's not Roethlisberger, I agree he's the clear favorite here, and for good reason. Stafford is another intriguing one, because if you do like the punching Judy Lions,
9, 10.
I was gonna say 10, I think, somewhere around there.
I would not give him comeback.
Well, I mean, you know, when you miss the end of a season like that, the last six games, you're out. I mean, Alex Smith would be the great story, that's for sure. The NFL loves J.J. Watt. Any reason to give him an award?
But he's always a comeback player. He's always missing.
That's
always
my problem, is how can you invest in a player that you
I'm out on him.
He can't play. That's my
I'm out on Stafford. Listen, if Gronk has a fantastic year, yeah, give it to him. I just don't think he will. No. So for me, it is Roethlisberger, A.J. Green, Alex Smith. That's it.
Gronk has lost a significant step. I don't care if he's healthier than he's been in a while. He's also older, and I think it's taken a lot of tread on those tires. Cam Newton would be fascinating.
Ah, forget it.
But the NFL ain't giving him awards, or the AP for that matter. A.J. Green, that's another one, too, where that would be a fun narrative, because that would be Joe Burrow having a really successful season. So that would be a fun one, certainly from that standpoint. But Alex Smith would be the feel-good story. I would love to see that. And, talked about the Redskins getting to 5 wins. There's your narrative for 5 wins for the Redskins. There you go, Washington fans. Alex Smith, the triumphant comeback. That's the ride. That's the ride we want to go on.
I hope he's healthy, and I hope we get a chance to see him play, for sure. All right, coming up next, for those of you who are among the 7 million people that watched the NASCAR race at Darlington coming up on Sunday, we had Matt Sells on the show last week. He said Kevin Harvick was probably going to win the race, and he did. So we want to bring him on again. We got a race coming up on Wednesday night. He joins us next right here on Fantasy Sports Today to talk a little NASCAR. Don't go away.
In-game live.
The NFL is doing something that they haven't really ever done before, and that is not about Monday night, it's not about Sunday night, but it's about Friday. They're going to have a game on Christmas Day, Jared, taking Friday another kind of like swipe at other sports.
The NFL is going to eat into that market share, no doubt about it. It's the NFL. It is an intriguing little move that they made.
Catch the program every single day on EvanTSY Radio and on the Sports Grid Network. DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Mitch back with you, of course. And wow, it was a banner weekend for NASCAR. In fact, if you guys didn't notice, it was the biggest NASCAR race watched in the United States since 2017. Almost 7 million viewers on Sunday. And I'm guessing a lot of average fans of sports just looking for something to watch. And by the way, who was all over it when he came on with us last week? It was Matt Sells from Fantasy Alarm. He was the NASCAR Writer of the Year last year, and we got to bring him back on, of course, this week and get his thoughts on the upcoming race. Matt, thanks for coming on again. What's going on?
Oh, you know, just trying to pump out content for Wednesday night's NASCAR race. It's a pretty quick turnaround here. Not really used to it in the NASCAR circles. Yeah. This is the first time that I can remember that they've run a midweek cup race since, I think, like the early 1970s, which I wasn't alive for. So, but yeah, I had several friends of mine who don't usually watch NASCAR, and they watched NASCAR and they enjoyed it, so they might start watching some more of it. So let's hope for another good showing on Wednesday night.
Yeah, and look, that's the thing, is that the average person who hasn't had any sports, like me, is tuning in. And I did. I didn't see the whole race, but I tuned in. I'm like, wow, you know, it's like, it's almost like UFC in a bit, where it's like we're gravitating to the sports. We want to check them out without the fans. And then once we get used to it, it becomes something that was interesting. And so before we get to this week's race, let's take it back to last week and let's take a look at the results from the race at Darlington on Sunday. Kevin Harvick, as you see here, ended up with 54 points. He wins the race, his 50th all-time. Alex Bowman finished second. Kurt Busch third. Chase Elliott fourth. And, of course, Denny Hamlin closing it out with 43 points. So, Matt, as we bring you back in here, I know that you pretty much thought it was going to go down like this, almost according to plan, and a little bit of an interesting start for at least one driver. But in the end, Harvick was the winner.
Yeah, I was all over Kevin Harvick all week based on his track history at this track. He had looked pretty good in the first few races this year. I really liked him. So it was really quite nice to see that he dominated. I mean, he dominated a little bit more than I thought he would, leading 159 of the 293 laps. But yeah, I mean, Kyle Busch was the only one that failed pre-race inspection, so he had to start from the rear, which, you know, He made a valiant comeback, and then he had some more trouble, so he didn't quite wind up with, I think, where he wanted to start. But it'll certainly add fuel to his fire for Wednesday night, because he's going to have to start 26th Wednesday night. So that'll make him a pretty interesting play for both DFS and wagering on.
Yeah, interesting note that one of the drivers, Matt, didn't even finish the first lap of the race. What happens if you had him involved in
your team? Ricky Stenhouse Jr. was kind of on brand. They call him Recky for a reason. In fact, he got fired from his last car team because the car owner thought he wrecked too many cars. And bam, first race back in 2 months, the guy spun out coming off of turn two and hit the inside wall and ended his day without even making it back to the start-finish line once. So, yeah, that wasn't great. I know he was played in 15%, I think, of some of the big DraftKings GPP tournaments.
That's a big number.
Yeah, that's gonna kind of crush your ability to really climb the leaderboards if one of your guys doesn't even start, basically didn't even start the race for all intents and purposes, and then cost you quite a bit of points because he started I think in the mid-20s and then, you know, finished 40th. So that's not a good start to the restarting of the season for Stenhouse.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get to this week's race, look, Matt, you follow NASCAR very closely for many years and all of the work that you did. What were the biggest differences, if there were any differences, watching this race for you on Sunday?
So I have to commend Fox for their broadcast, because I honestly couldn't, had I not known that Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon and most of the team were all doing it from a remote location, I wouldn't have been able to tell. It was almost like they were at the track. I mean, the weirdest thing for me was not seeing any fans in the stands, because you're used to, you know, those aerial shots still show fans in the stands, and you can see in the pre-race stuff, drivers signing autographs and taking selfies, and they didn't have to do that. And then I guess the other most jarring thing for me was seeing Kevin Harvick's victory lane photo after the race, because there's nobody in victory lane with him. Normally there's, you know, all of his team, his crew chief, some folks from, you know, a sponsor, which was Busch Beer, and there'd be a bunch of champagne and confetti going, and instead it's just him, and he's got a big old black mask over his face, so you can only see from, like, here up, and so it was just a weird feeling. But, I mean, other than that, the broadcast, I couldn't tell really any difference from it.
Yeah, and I think that with other sports, maybe that's the key, is that there's like that shock value initially, because look, NASCAR packs them in. They can get 100,000 at a race if they want. But once you get past the initial shock value and then you realize you're watching competitive sports of any kind, I give NASCAR a ton of credit. And you're hearing essentially negativity about all of the major sports and all the possibilities. Well, listen, if NASCAR could get it going, I understand it's a little bit easier for them. There's not a lot of, it's not a contact sport. They're in a car. But look, the numbers do not lie. We were so infatuated with WrestleMania with the numbers that they did. NASCAR made that look silly. I mean, 7 million people watching on Sunday.
Yeah, that's a heap ton of people. I mean, and consider the fact
the Daytona 500 is the biggest.
So, yeah, I mean, that's considered the Super Bowl of NASCAR is the Daytona 500, which kicks off the season in early February, like a week after the Super Bowl. So, you know, you've got people, there's no other sports going on then either. And the fact that this one beat, you know, was the highest watch since the, I think, the 2017 Daytona 500 is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. All right, Matt. So, look, I mean, you know the respect factor in this game lasts for about 10 minutes. You did great last week. We're already on to the next week. Yep. You've got to just throw it away and move on. So today is Tuesday. So tomorrow night, Wednesday night, they are going to air this again. Is it on Fox? Is it on?
It's on FS1.
Okay, so it's on Fox Sports 1 Wednesday night. Tell us, for everybody who's out there, a little bit about the race. We have a lot of people from a wagering perspective who are probably watching. And by the way, a lot of people who may have just caught their first NASCAR race over the weekend. It's possible.
Yeah, so this isn't going to be a replay. It will be at the same track. It'll be at Darlington Raceway. So when you turn it on, you might think, oh, God, they're reshowing the race from Sunday just to get more airtime. Nope, it's a completely new race at Darlington Raceway on Wednesday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. The things that are important, you'll see that the race number will say Toyota 500. Well, they're not actually running 500 miles. They're running 500 kilometers. So Wednesday night's race will be about 70 laps shorter than Sunday's race because it'll be 227 laps this time as opposed to 293. So you'll have guys starting further back will have a little bit less opportunity to move forward quite as quickly. Laps led are going to be down a bit, I would assume, because there's, again, 70 laps less this time around. The other important things to know for DFS and wagering is that they inverted the starting spots from the finish positions from Sunday. So if you finished in spots 21 through 40 on Sunday, that's where you're starting on Wednesday night.
Okay.
If you finished in the top 20 on Sunday, your spots get reversed. So Kevin Harvick won it on Sunday. That means he's starting 20th on Wednesday night. Alex Bowman finished second. That means he starts 19th on Wednesday night. Ryan Preece finished 20th on Sunday, so he will be the pole sitter for Wednesday night's race. And Ty Dillon finished 19th in Sunday's race, so he'll start second for Wednesday night. So in terms of wagering and DFS, that makes a big difference because you have a bunch of expensive guys that are going to be starting further back, which means position differential is going to be a huge factor in this race for DFS. It also changes some of the odds because if your big name guys come further back, theoretically it makes it a little tougher to win. Although we saw Kurt Busch start 22nd on Sunday and finish third. So it's possible. You can do it.
Yeah, it can happen. So, you know, I understand that, you know, you'll really dive in very deep a little bit later on. And, of course, people at FantasyAlarm.com can check out all of your analysis and information aside from us. Give us a little bit of a preview as to what you may be thinking either on the DFS side or the wagering side for Wednesday night.
So the tricky part is going to come in with the cheaper guys in DFS because a bunch of the cheaper guys – had really good runs on Sunday, like Ty Dillon, who is usually less than $6,000 on both sites, or Ryan Preece, who's pretty cheap, or John Hunter Nemechek, who's usually pretty cheap. Those guys had really good runs on Sunday. So they're going to start close to the front, which is going to reduce their upside because they're likely going to drop back once the big guns like Harvick and Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. and Eric Jones and folks like that make it to the front. For wagering, I think you kind of still have to go with Kevin Harvick. I mean, he's still my favorite play, even though he's starting 20th, and even though he's only plus 400 now for the odds at most of the books. So he's by far the prohibitive favorite. But he's already announced he's going to run the same car that he ran on Sunday. They're running that on Wednesday. So you already saw that car go from sixth to first and then run away with the race. He won by more than 2 seconds by the end of the race. He led more than half the laps. And that was the first day race run at Darlington since 2014. The rest of them have all been night races. So the key thing, the key takeaway that a lot of people won't necessarily realize is that pay attention to who did really well in the back half of Sunday's race. Because the temperatures in the back half of Sunday's race are going to be basically what the starting temperatures are for Wednesday night's race. As the temperature cools down, cars drive differently, the track handles differently. So the guys that ran really well in the last 30, 40 laps of Sunday's race are going to probably start pretty well Wednesday night's race.
Interesting. All right. Some really good analysis there, Matt. By the way, real quick, before you go, what's the next race after Wednesday nights? Is it this weekend?
Sunday. Yeah. Sunday of Memorial Day weekend, which would be the 24th, for their traditional Coca-Cola 600, which is a huge race. That's probably the second most important race of the season behind the Daytona 500. So that'll be at Charlotte Motor Speedway, 600 miles under the lights on Sunday night.
All right. What we'll do is we'll check back with you again next week. Matt, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it. Congrats on all the success so far. And it's good to have some sports back. That's for sure. Thanks for coming on.
Sure thing.
All right. Matt Sells there from Fantasy Alarm. We'll take a quick time out here on Fantasy Sports Today. Joe Pizzapia will be back with me. We continue on our fantasy discussion, our reality discussion, as we move closer to getting sports back. You're watching FST right here on Sports Grid.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
FST here on Tuesday. Craig and Joe back with you. The one thing that I can't wait to do is to get myself a media credential for the 2020 Major League Baseball season. So before we go into my past, Joe, I want you to think of the future and make a prediction here.
All right.
Will Craig Mish be allowed to go to one Major League Baseball game this season? What is your prediction? As media.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to shake the giant eight ball of my head. I'm going to say at some point.
And when will that be?
That is going to be in August.
No media in June and spring. No media July 4th opening day, whenever that is. August is the time.
I think August is when Mish is allowed to go back, both by his wife and by the general
that
public.
That is really more of the story.
When you were asking, I wasn't thinking about like the governor. I'm thinking about the governor of the Mish household. That's what I'm thinking.
I'm thinking about the commissioner. The real commissioner. Valerie.
Just do me a favor. Just don't get suspended. Don't do any scandals, please. No scandals.
I'm going to predict that I'm going to be in July.
You think July? Okay.
I do. I don't think fans will. I think that they're going to have, they really are going to have to dig down deep and allow the media, because we are going to be able to do things and cover.
Well,
they're going to want the attention.
Broadcast media, but is it necessary to credential media for those first couple weeks of?
It is probably not. It is probably not.
See, that's my thought process. Is you're looking at a situation where let's get the essentials going, and if there's no setbacks with the essentials of the players and the broadcasters of that specific game and the field crew and all that, the umpires. Because then when you start allowing media in, that's more people who are coming in exposure-wise who are not being tested. And that's where I think
I think we will be tested, for sure.
I have a hard time them being allowed in locker rooms and things like that.
They've already said that's not happening. I'm just saying that will they allow me in the building, allow me to go up in the elevator and sit in the press box and tweet and take pictures and watch the game?
I think August. So that's – I think August. Yes.
It could be. I don't have a clear-cut answer. From what I'm told – there's a hard push to allow media in.
Well, let's get a hard push for players to play first, because I think that's the push. Because we thought we'd have kind of – did you feel like last week we're going to have that locked up?
With the baseball?
Yeah, with the baseball
week.
And all.
This week.
You think this week?
Yeah.
I thought last week.
Did I say? Maybe I did. You're pushing the deadline. I think it has to be this week. It has to be.
Well, if it's not this week, then is that a red flag?
If it's not this week, there's no season. I mean, when you got to start spring training at some point. What are you going to tell players on May 30th, tomorrow, be in your spring training spot?
Mm-hmm. What happens when the first player tests positive?
Oh, gosh, I don't want to do that. All right, let's move on. I do not want to do that conversation. Okay, so the reason why I asked that is because as some of you may know from following me on social media or following me in my career through the years, I've been very fortunate to cover a lot of different sporting events. And the one thing that I always did is I always relished it and never took anything for granted and soaked up a lot of the moments that I was in, especially for the first 10 or 15 years of me being in the media. So I thought that it would be cool on today's show to go back in history and show you the actual media credential pass that got me into these sporting events. And I'll tell you what happened at the event, and then we can kind of take it from there. We'll do this today and tomorrow. I mean, we could do it forever. I have so many of them.
Well, I'm sure with all the stacks of boxes that are just behind you after
the clouds. Well, I have them in a book. I have them all, like, labeled in a book.
Yeah. God, you're so organized. I'm so impressed.
I'm really not, but I really
had a feeling. Just with these things. That's what I'm impressed. Like, your pants are everywhere in the bedroom. There's dirty clothes everywhere. Everything's askew. Press passes, neatly lined up in folders. That's very nice. Sure.
All right. So this first one is a picture of my credential to get into the 1999 Final Four, which was at Tropicana Field in St. Petersburg on March 29th, 1999. It was the national championship game. So again, this was the Saturday night, Monday night deal with the Final Four. The Final Four teams were Connecticut, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Duke. No surprise there. And in the championship game, it was an upset. Duke was favored, and UConn and Richard Hamilton ended up defeating Duke. And at the time, if I'm not mistaken, this was one of the bigger crowds in the history of the Final Four. Because remember, Joe, having at a big stadium like this, at Tropicana Field, they were able to fit 50, 60,000 people here. So I don't know if this was my first or it's probably my second or third Final Four. I don't even remember. But either way, that's that credential that you saw right there from a TV station I used to work for in Sarasota. That got me in the door.
I like the palm trees. Like I say, it's a nice little touch there at the top. I'm a big fan of the palm trees. I like when the passes look like an event. I don't like when it just says the name of the event on it. Yeah, that's crappy. That's bad job. Bad job, whoever makes these credentials. You got to give them a little flavor. You got to be a little fun. This one's fun. I like this. It feels right. It feels like Florida. And that's the whole point. And I think that's fun. Rip Hamilton. Boy, there's a name I haven't thought of.
I'll tell you, the Final Four is an epic event to go to. Because
I'm sure.
You have an arena, and provided it's one of the bigger ones, you have 60,000 fans, and essentially it's 20,000 fans on one spot, 20,000, and they separate them. So it's like nuts.
Right, you get the left and right. That's what's so interesting.
On Saturday. It's a great experience. One of the better things that I've always enjoyed. So that was the NCAA basketball championship of 1999. Let's go back a couple years before. And let's take a look at the 1997 National Championship in college football. They called this one the Battle of the Bayou. This is the Sugar Bowl from January in New Orleans, Louisiana. This is my Gators beating Florida State 52-20. And what happened to make this really interesting, Joe, and something that probably will unlikely to happen again, although it has happened between Alabama and LSU, Florida State beat Florida during the regular season only 3 weeks before. And that was the only loss for Florida, and Florida State was undefeated. But it was a championship game, and so essentially in the end, Florida had one loss to Florida State. Florida State had one loss to Florida, but because it was the championship, the Gators smashed FSU 52-20. Danny Werfel, who was the Heisman Trophy Award winner, also was the MVP of the game. Ike Hilliard, who went on to have a nice career in the NFL, had two touchdown receptions. Fred Taylor also had a touchdown as well. What I remember from this is, now in 1997, I had graduated from high school in 95. So I didn't have a ton of experience covering games. But I kind of knew the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do. My takeaway from this one was after the game was over, What they used to do with football games, I'm not sure if they still do, they used to allow the media on the field with 5 minutes to play. You could go watch the last 5 minutes on the field. It was always a really cool experience. You could go on the field before the game, but you got to watch the end on the field. You just had to pick a spot that wasn't blocking a photographer or something. So it was clear the Gators were going to win. It was 52-20 with a minute left. Gators win the game. I'm holding my microphone. My videographer is nowhere to be found. I can't find him. I can't interview anyone. I look over, and he is, like, dancing, jumping up and down, my videographer, with the Gators players on the car, like, on the car, the giveaway car that they threw, like, from the 50-yard line. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, we got to work here. You know, we got to do the – and it was just, like, one of those surreal moments where I think that he got, like, caught up and didn't realize we were there to work, and essentially that was
– it seems like he was working pretty hard.
Like, what are you doing?
They get the pom-poms like, with the cheerleaders and everything and the whole deal.
We got Fred Taylor right here. Like, what are you doing? Steve Spurrier. Hello.
Seems like he was having some fun there at halftime, maybe.
No, it was the end of the game. The game was over.
No, I mean, he was having some fun at halftime, and then maybe
I see what you're saying.
That's why you got him dancing on the car.
Never went to another game.
Him or you?
Never. Oh, him. He never covered another game after that. I mean, we missed the whole post game.
Oh, not a good look. You don't want to lose your job there. But I'm sure it was an epic party for him hanging out with those guys.
No, and I remember I had to run to a hotel to do a live shot back for my station, like after the game was over, and I was like running late because we didn't get any interviews.
What's the bird on the ticket too? Because there's like a little bird in the bayou thing. Have you noticed in the top right corner?
I have no idea.
Is it a stork? Is it a pelican? What the hell is that thing? I don't know what kind of birds live in the bayou, but there's a birdie in a nest at the end. This is not nearly as good as the palm tree one. I like the palm trees, got color. This one was a little lamer, even though it's a better story, I think,
Okay. Pelican is a state bird of Louisiana, so there you go.
Well, so there you go. Thank you, Brett. See, Brett, making – this is an educational program. This is every hour we give you little nuggets, little educated nuggets like that. But there you go. The Pelicans Pelicans reigning supreme there, but I'm not a big fan of the logo. Love the story. Good story.
Okay, the next one is they've changed the credentials of the NFL significantly since 2001, but this is what they used to look like. And this was what we were talking about the other day, in case you missed it on the show. The Dolphins played the Patriots Sunday, October 7th, 2001. I could have sworn this was Brady's first start ever, but it was not. I guess he played against Indianapolis one game before. I don't remember at all. I thought it was his first start. It was not. It was his second start and his third game. The Dolphins annihilated the Patriots that game, 30-10. Brady was 12 for 24, 86 passing yards. He was sacked four times. He fumbled on his own one, and Jason Taylor picked it up and scored a touchdown. Can you imagine that? If you would have told me at that time the Dolphins would go in the crapper for 10 years and Brady would win all the Super Bowls, you never would have guessed it. Lamar Smith rushed for 144 yards on 29 carries and a touchdown. What you're looking at right there, that is my actual credential. That I have all the credentials from that season of the Dolphins season, and that's what got me in that game. I remember thinking to myself, man, they got to get Bledsoe back like as soon as they possibly can, and it shows you that those teams think about that. We talk about all of those teams that passed on Brady, right? Like,
I've got it hanging up right behind me. Above me is the draft card blown up. Pick number 199, Tom Brady.
Right, but who even after this example of a game thought Tom Brady was going to be good?
I guess
Bill
Belichick.
Think about that, too.
And I guess it's kind of full circle because this year, a lot of people asking the same question. Like, if Stidham comes out and he's not very good right away, they just got to cut bait and move on to Hoyer? Probably not. I think
they should.
I think you have to trust Belichick. He knows a thing or two about football. He was successful as a defensive coordinator with the Giants. He was successful as assistant head coach of the Patriots before he was coach. He was successful with the Browns, got them into playoffs before everything fell apart. I think you just have to trust that the brain trust knows what they're talking about. And, you know, it's very funny how people want to panic sometimes, but they don't forget the struggles of the great players early on. Peyton Manning threw a ton of interceptions his first year. Lamar Jackson had some moments in his first year. Everyone rolled their eyes and said, this guy's a running back. He's not a quarterback. Well, guess what? He's also MVP now. So how about that? It's a pretty good thing there. And I don't think he was a running back winning MVP. He was a quarterback. So at the end, let's not overreact to young players and give them a little bit more of a rope, so to speak, before we say they're a bust.
Tom Brady fumbles on his own one. Imagine that. Fumbling on his own one, Taylor picks it up, runs
nine
over.
Super Bowls later.
you never would think that that could happen, but it did. All right, we'll be back with more fantasy sports today in just a couple of minutes. Stay on the grid. Joe and I are back right after this. Don't go away.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Craig and Joe back with you, kicking it here on a Tuesday. We'll be back for another edition, of course, tomorrow as we push toward the weekend, getting closer to Memorial Day weekend. And by the way, we will have shows on Memorial Day weekend as well. But you know who else may be having shows pretty soon? Yesterday it was announced, Joe, that the state of Texas, the governor declared that starting May 31st, that sports can reopen in the state of Texas. That also goes along with California and the announcement yesterday by New York. So no fans, but looks like in the month of June, people who were loyal to Sports Grid, you're going to get what you were looking for here, because I think we got some stuff coming.
Yeah, and that's very exciting, and it's going to be gradual, and it should be gradual. I don't think anybody wants to reopen everything and go crazy and have everything go right back to where it was. I don't think anybody wants that to happen. So I think it's a matter of patience. And I know it's been difficult for everybody for 2+ months now to be patient. And I understand it's even more difficult for people in places where they don't see the impact of the virus as much as people like me do in New Jersey and New York, where you see it and you know people firsthand, friends of yours who have either lost loved ones or friends of yours who've had it. I have had many friends in New York who have had to deal with this. Some of our colleagues even here at the network have had to deal with this. Sure. And the good news is that the recovery rate is very high. But the bad news is this is a very real thing and it should be taken seriously. I actually read a Florida man story of a guy who wasn't taking it seriously, didn't think it was a big deal, had all these social media posts, and then went out and was doing all the things he would normally do. And he caught it, and so did his wife. And his wife is in a very, very bad situation now. He's gotten better, but she is not. So patience is important. And I know it's very difficult. Let's get the games back first and foremost. Everybody can enjoy them from the comfort of their own homes or their streaming devices. And even better yet, it's something that if you're stuck with your family, maybe you can all watch together and enjoy. Or maybe it gives you a little bit of an escape from your family if you don't like your family that much. You've been stuck with them for 2 months. So games are good. Let's get the games back. Let's start to open up in that way. Crowds will come eventually. This is not going to be forever. It's always very difficult. Somebody also lived in post 9/11 New York. I can tell you that was a very, very weird time to be alive and a very weird thing to go through. So I hope that everybody out there is just staying safe and patient, because hopefully we will get this. And baseball needs to come to some sort of decision this week. I think you and I both agree. If it's not this week, I think that's kind of a red flag, don't you?
Yeah, I talked to a few players yesterday, just kind of texting back and forth.
What's their tone?
I would say they're cautiously optimistic, but there's definitely still some skepticism that this will get
done. Do you get fear from the – are you feeling like they're afraid to go back?
Not necessarily, because a lot of young players – well, the younger players that is – well, I mean, that's not true. I think that some players are over 30 that I speak to. But most of the ones that I've talked to, like, they want to play. They want to get back at it, but they're still skeptical, which tells me that they are not at least as close to working this out as maybe is perceived.
You think at the end the owners will have to bite some sort of financial bullet in order to make it all work? I agree.
Yep, they will.
Now, will they do that, in your opinion?
I think that they're going to have to. The players are on the field, and they're the ones who are putting themselves at risk for this. And it may be silly, and the players, you know, no player may get it. No player may suffer from it, and some players may have already had it. Right. But it's a business, and in the business, they're the ones that are putting themselves at risk, and there's a price to be paid for that. And that price is going to have to be paid. I don't know what that will be, but It'll get sorted out, I think, and I think that they will play. I got to tell you, though, from reading some of the things that were in that memo that was passed around, like to think that they have to completely stop doing things the way that they were used to doing, high-fiving and all of those other things. The natural point of competition is high-fiving, is, and for baseball, it's licking your fingers and doing those things. Well, I don't know how they're going to stop that.
Of all the games, baseball is one of the grosser ones in that sense.
It has
the guys going to their mouth constantly. To me, that was always kind of gross anyway. The quarterbacks always do that too. You get the little tackiness on your hand. Like, I get that, but oh my gosh. I mean, baseball got some of the more disgusting habits, you know, between the constant spitting and the other stuff. I mean, I was a baseball player. I did all the time, but you know, you look back and you go, God, we're kind of gross. Like, we're disgusting. No doubt about it. Not that every other sport doesn't have their gross things, but baseball has a little bit more in this sense. And maybe it's better for everybody not do that, but I don't understand. Why can't you high five if you're catching a ball, touching with your hand and throwing it to somebody else, and then they catch it with their glove and then their hand?
Well, they're going to carry sanitary wipes in their pocket and whatnot.
Is that you're going to wipe the ball down? The umpire just wipes. No, but I'm serious. I mean, it's kind of like, if you can't high five, I understand not putting your spit on the ball. That I'm fine with. That makes a lot of sense. But I mean,
but the pitchers lick their hand.
That's what I'm saying. Like, don't lick your hand. Pitchers shouldn't be licking their hand and touching the ball. But if I catch the ball and throw the ball, I should be able to high five you too. I mean, can we just not put our hand? I mean, I don't know about you. You've had young kids in your house. You say, hey, stop putting your hands in your mouth. Like, kids do that stuff. They're like constantly.
They do.
They do. Don't touch it. Stop doing that. You're an adult. You're 26 years old. Stop putting your hands in your mouth.
Have you stopped and thought about things that, like, the first thing that you'll do when this is all safe?
Well, I'm bummed, man, because we were probably going to lose a vacation that we were planning for a very long time at the end of June. We were going to go back down to Universal, down the Florida area. My kids were looking forward to that. I doubt very highly that's going to happen. We
probably
lost our tickets to our WWE event twice in New York, so that's a bummer. So I'm a big experiential dad. Like, I don't like buying them things. I like taking them places, and they prefer that too. They like to go stay at the hotel and go see a show or a concert or something like that. Or, you know, they're very much into that. And I think that's a better way to spend money than just on material stuff. So it's kind of tough because you can't really do that. I'm just looking forward to the pool getting opened sometime this week and the weather getting warm enough to actually use said pool in New Jersey. That's another that's a wrinkle in the whole pool thing, very different than the Florida,
even still with it opening back up in my community that I live, I don't think that my wife's going to want us to go. Like, I think we're still
going. Well, that's the downside of the community pool versus the private pool. It's my pool. I'm the guy going in it.
Absolutely.
Who does it? So that's a plus. So, I mean, to be honest, I would like to get back to work at the studio, you know, doing that Sunday show at the FanDuel Sportsbook, and I'm not trying to plug it, but it's a fun environment to be doing a show from. It's very live. And
a lot of the casinos in Florida are opening back up.
I would very much like to get back to doing Diamond Bets live there. That would be a fun thing to be able to do.
How far do you live from there?
I live almost exactly an hour. FanDuel Sportsbook is in East Rutherford.
Meadowlands
Stadium. Yeah. Yep. So it's still barely New Jersey, but it is New Jersey still. I'd like to get back to that environment. I miss our fun PAs there. We have a good time doing that show. So that's something I'm looking forward to. What are you looking forward to most besides getting a haircut?
Yeah. In fact, my hairdresser reached out to me and he said,
you have a hairdresser or a stylist?
Stylist, I guess. I think probably in the next couple of weeks, he'll come here to my house.
Good. I think
because he also takes care of my wife. And so, and my daughter, my son, he goes to like a kiddie place, but I would assume that he'll just spend 5 hours here and knock everybody out.
Haircut, line everybody. I mean, if he's wearing a mask and you're wearing a mask, like, what's the big deal? I think we got to start somewhere. I think we do. I think it's important to start somewhere. The curves.
I think that for me, it would just be like to go to my favorite. Like, I wouldn't even go right now to my favorite restaurant and sit down and eat anyway, but it would just be like to get takeout from there would be cool. Like, it's been 2 months, man.
Well,
like,
we just broke down last week and did the takeout. My favorite Chinese place finally opened. They reopened. They got a whole thing. They got like a plexiglass thing. You can't even go in the place because they don't do delivery. It's only takeout. You have to go pick it up. So they have a whole thing. They put it in a thing, like a crate, and you can take the food out of the crate and the bags. And it's wild. It's a whole thing, but it's totally worth it. So I recommend if your favorite place is doing it, go support them. And
yeah, I would like to take it out there.
You got to support. Otherwise, it's not going to be there someday.
We ordered yesterday from Whole Foods. We had delivery. Mm-hmm. That was a first for Whole Foods. We were Whole Foods in. Do they have it in New York? Whole Foods?
Oh, sure, we have in Jersey.
Okay,
yeah, I don't.
So we wanted to do it for the last 2 months, but every time we went to go put in the order, it was always like, "We will deliver this in 2 days."
I've gone to the grocery store every other week. I've tried to limit the exposure.
Yeah, I've gone now every other week.
Yeah, I told you I went to Lowe's this weekend for the painting project, right, and I could not believe it. So I think mentally people are feeling good to go out. It's like, when do we feel good enough to not wear a mask everywhere? Because that's what's a little weird. It's a little weird to look to your left, look to your right. I feel like generally speaking, though, everyone's being really nice to each other. Every time I'm on a walk or going outside or whatever, everybody's saying hello to each other and waving and saying hi. And that's not something I normally got, like even if I was out for a walk. People just kind of had their headphones on, kept to themselves. Not now. Everybody, I feel like, kind of, you know, got shocked back into humanity a little bit. And I think we kind of need that check every now and then. And it feels like slowly we're inching towards those better days. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's be patient, like we said at the top. And I'd like to see Major League Baseball. I think when you start to get big things like baseball, like the NBA, if you can start to get some of those big things coming back, you know what? I think that starts to make everybody feel better about the future. And it might sound stupid, but sports are really important to us.
Yeah, and my buddy Andy Slater reported yesterday that the Marlins are going to be able to start practicing, but individually starting today. So the players that I've spoken to, not all of them are going. In fact, I don't know that there's even a lot of their 40-man roster that's going to be going, but let's just say maybe like a half a dozen guys. But this is a story I think that we're going to have to start following around the league. The players that I've talked to thus far have said that they haven't heard anything official. The Marlins are in a little bit of a different situation because all their players live here. So it's not like saying like, oh yeah, all the Orioles can go. Like none of the Orioles are in Sarasota right now.
Right.
They'll
have exactly.
To fly there. But Miami is not that far from Jupiter. And in fact, a lot of the players live in Jupiter anyway. So hopefully later this week, we get some good news on that. We will be back here tomorrow for another edition of our show, as we take a look at some of the futures in the NFL, aside from those win totals. We've got some really interesting positions where each team will finish in the division. And based on their order of finish, you can actually bet on that on the FanDuel Sportsbook. So we'll take a look at that as well. Also, as we get closer to the end of the week, should any of the sports kick back in, we will definitely review those for you, give you the best DFS options, the best fantasy options, and potentially even the best wagering options for those. And so you'll have to just stay tuned, kind of to stay on Sports Grid to see where we go from there. Joe, real quick, what do you have coming up on Diamond Bets this Saturday?
We're going to start dealing with some of the player props and going through some of the team win totals. We're basically re-ramping up our previews for the teams because we did it way back in February and March, and now some of the circumstances are very different. And some of these circumstances now with a potential shortened season could work in some other team's favor. So we're going to redo everything basically starting from scratch because we care about our viewers. So check that out Sunday.
All right. Sunday. Sorry, not Saturday.
That's okay.
Thanks again to Matt Sells for coming on the show. Thanks to Brett, Ryan, and Danny for putting the show together today. Joe and I will be back with you tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. Eastern, right here for another edition of Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. Have a great day, everybody.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.